Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. It is Monday, March 9th, 2026. We have a quorum present. And first, a reminder about our committee rules. Signs are not permitted in the committee room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, applause, or other disruptions are not allowed. Sitting or standing in the aisles is not permitted, and the State Patrol and House Security staff are present to ensure everyone's safety. If you leave the committee room, please hang on to your tickets to re-enter the room. We have a full agenda today, so we'll be limiting testimony to 2 minutes per person so that everyone has a chance to speak. First order of business is to approve the minutes from our March 4th, 2026 meeting. Representative Carroll, would you approve the minutes?
I'd be honored to, Chair. I so move it.
Thank you, Representative Carroll. Approval of the minutes has been moved. All in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? And the motion prevails. The minutes are approved. We'll move on to the first bill, and we have Representative Hansen. House File 3454. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hansen. I will move that the House File 3454 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And Representative Hansen, when you are ready, please to your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. Social work is a 125-year-old profession that has really deep roots in some of the most core components of who America is today. House File 3454 will sunset a 40-year-old social work title accuracy exemption that was originally intended to sunset many moons ago. This bill requires that counties only assign the title of social worker to employees who hold a social work license or degree. Now, it's important to note, nowhere else in the state can someone hold a degree with no license and be referred to as a social worker, but this bill continues that exemption for counties as a part of the negotiations over the years. A title is a form of public recognition, of trust and safety, and it upholds the standards for a variety of professionally trained and licensed roles in society. We're used to hearing the title of doctor or officer or nurse or the many other titles used by licensed professionals. These are titles that are reserved strictly to those who hold the appropriate degree or degrees and have met the bar for licensure set by their appropriate professional board. Whether it's a doctor, nurse, plumber, electrician, broker, barber, or another professional, the public expects that the use of a title like this is an indication of training, education, and current licensure. In other words, this tells them that they're working with someone that they can trust. Public trust and public integrity rely on title accuracy and transparency. People expect honesty when interacting with licensed professionals, and they expect the government and governing boards of professions to hold a firm line on this. The public wants to know that they can trust someone who says they are a doctor, a lawyer, an officer, a nurse, or a social worker. And unfortunately, today, recipients of county services and other folks partnering with the county, such as foster families and others interacting with child protective services and families working on reunification plans, aren't always provided that same level of public protection and trust. They are not always sure if the county worker who is using the title of social worker is being held to the same standard or responsible to the same professional board as others, nor that the worker has ever even been trained in social work, as the use of the title implies. So let me tell you what House File 3454 does not require. It does not require anyone to get a license or degree if they don't have one in order to continue doing the tasks of their job at the county as a, quote, social worker. It does not require that they are fired or let go or rehired if they don't hold that license or degree. What it does require is that county workers accurately represent themselves to the public and that those roles be renamed from social work to accommodate the workers who do not have nor need a degree or license for their jobs. We make no mandate, nor do we exert any preference for what these roles are renamed to, and the bill does offer transition dates that we are very flexible on as well. That's it. You might hear things that overcomplicate this proposal, but this bill strictly brings social work up to the same professional standard as other professions that are critical to a functional society. I have three testifiers with me today. We have one, the best of the best, really, Dr. Karen Goodenough, who's a nationally recognized expert in social work as a licensed practice. She's the executive director of the Minnesota chapter of the National Association of Social Workers and the chair of the National Licensure Task Force. She holds 3 degrees in social work, including a bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degree. I also have a big-hearted, loving Minnesotan whose passions as a foster parent was impacted by title inaccuracy. And we also lastly have a dedicated county commissioner who will attest that the sky did not fall when their county honored social work title accuracy. And with that, Chair, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you for the introduction, Representative Hansen. We will begin with Dr. Goodenough. She is on virtual. And I would just ask you to speak up. It's better to speak up a little bit in this hearing room from virtual. And please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, lovely. Chair and members of the committee, thanks so much for having me today, and thanks so much to Representative Hansen. My name is Dr. Karen Goodenough. As she said, I hold bachelor's, master's, and PhD all in social work from Minnesota schools, and I serve as executive director of the National Association of Social Workers Minnesota chapter. And I chair our National Licensure Task Force and serve on the Interstate Social Work Compact Commission. I'm a national expert on social work licensure, and I support House File 3454. I regularly take calls from frustrated members of the public who are upset about their county, quote, social worker. And my first question often is, are they actually a trained social worker? In Minnesota, social work is a licensed profession governed by Chapter 148E, with clear standards for education, training, supervision, and ethics. Those standards apply in hospitals, schools, and nonprofits, and every space across the state. Yet in county government, the title of social worker can still be used by individuals who do not meet those standards. Counties absolutely should hire interdisciplinary teams. People with backgrounds in psychology, criminal justice, and other fields can be skilled public servants. But the professional title of social worker must mean something specific. That title represents graduation from an accredited program, extensive supervised field education, and a commitment to a professional code of ethics. This bill is about transparency and consumer protection. Government employees should not be exempt a profession from its standards. If you were told a county doctor or nurse didn't need to meet education standards because they worked for the government, you would not accept that. And Minnesotans deserve the same clarity in social services. This is also about equity. Social work is a 125-year-old profession, historically dominated by women and often undervalued. Title protection reinforces professional standards and recognition of expertise. Minnesotans deserve to know who is providing their services. Counties deserve flexibility in their hiring, and our profession deserves title integrity across the state. I urge you to support House File 3454. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up would be Elizabeth Partington, and if you would state your name for the committee and have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Partington, and I am here in support of HF 3454. My spouse and I are former foster parents who retired our license because we felt misled when the county used the title social worker for workers who may not have met the qualifications of that title. When we welcomed baby M into our home, our expectations of the county social workers were rooted in the well-established definitions of social work and its code of ethics. As brand new foster parents dealing with a unique situation, we reached out to the baby's social worker several times. However, after some initial positive interactions, the worker's tone shifted, and our requests were met with increasing hostility and confusing or conflicting responses. When baby M spent time in the hospital and unfortunately sustained a rib fracture during her stay, her social worker's actions were confusing. She made drastic changes that no longer aligned with court agreements, encouraged police investigating the injury to investigate only me and no other people who had handled baby M, came to my police interview to make accusations against my character, and hung up the phone on us when we asked about the baby's next steps and whether we could say goodbye to her. By the time police determined that I had not caused our foster baby's injuries, the damage was done. Baby M had moved to her third home at only 2 months old, halting planned reunification with her sister and having no answers for her injuries. Because we felt that this social worker had caused unnecessary harm, we decided to report her to the Social Work Licensing Board. This is how we learned she did not have a social work license. In fact, not a single titled social worker we had worked with was licensed, and may have had no social work education at all. We were shocked. This title carries important expectations, but the county had lied to us and left us with none of the assurances of the title. By supporting House File 3454, you have the power to offer people transparency. You can ensure that those who use the title of social worker are held to the rigorous standards of that title, giving all those who work with the county a clear understanding of the roles of their support teams. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Partington. Thank you for your important testimony today. Next up, Commissioner Nicole Helgett will be on virtual as well. And if you would introduce yourself, please, Commissioner, and have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members. Thank you. My name is Nicole Helgett, and I'm a county commissioner in Nicollet County, Minnesota. I'm here today to speak about the essential role licensed social workers play in sustaining rural Minnesota communities as core public infrastructure and in support of House File 3454 to clarify and protect the language used to describe the roles of licensed social workers in our communities. At its core, this bill strengthens the integrity of Minnesota's social work licensing framework by refining and reinforcing who may legally use protected professional titles. In rural counties across our state, licensed social workers are often the most accessible mental health professionals available. In communities where psychiatrists and psychologists may be hours away or entirely unavailable, social workers are the clinicians conducting diagnostic assessments, providing trauma-informed therapy, managing suicide risk, and stabilizing families in crisis. A licensed social worker is frequently the first and sometimes the only professional responding. Rural practice is fundamentally different from urban practice. Service systems are thinner, wait lists are longer, transportation barriers are real, confidentiality is more complex in communities where everyone knows one another, and yet the needs are not smaller. They are magnified by isolation and limited access. In Nicollet County, we require a license to use the title social worker, not to create barriers, but to protect the public. When a professional title such as social worker or independent clinical social worker is used, the public assumes that individual has met rigorous education, examination, supervision, and ethical standards. That assumption must be accurate, especially as our state continues to experience unprecedented scrutiny. In Nicollet County, licensed social workers are essential to supporting families, protecting children, and strengthening rural communities. HF 3454 ensures that when residents hear the title social worker, they know they're working with a trained, licensed professional that they can trust. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Helgett. Are there any other members of the public wishing to testify to this bill today? Seeing none, we will move to discussion. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the bill, Representative Hansen. I'm a co-author on it. I fully support it. I just have one question. As I'm looking at the language of the bill, on line 1.14, you say that it says that a county social worker who does not hold a baccalaureate degree or graduate degree in social work or who is not licensed must not be presented to the public as a social worker. And I'm wondering, under the bill, from the testimony, and I think your intent is that unless they're licensed, they shouldn't call themselves a social worker, which is something I fully agree with. But the bill seems to allow them to use that title if they're not licensed but have a degree in social work. Could you kind of discuss that?
Sure.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Liebling. You're correct. This will be the only entity in the state of Minnesota where somebody with a degree in social work but no license will still be allowed to use that. This was part of negotiations in getting everybody on board with this. So, for example, I have a social work degree, but I don't hold a license, so therefore I don't use the title social worker. People will often refer to me that way, though, and so it is important that we, like, delineate that. So I always try to call that out when that happens. But you are correct that this will continue to be an exemption for the county. We feel like we don't want licensure to be the barrier for folks. If you have that degree at the county and you've been doing the work, we were fine with that negotiation.
Any follow-up?
Well, thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair. Thank you. I understand sometimes you get less than what you want just because of negotiations, and I appreciate that. But I hope sometime in the future we can actually, because this testifier was talking about something that won't really be solved by this. I mean, maybe it'll be better. I think it will be better if we have people using that title who actually have some training.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, someday I'd like to see us get to the place where only a person with a license can use the title. But thank you.
Representative Ndo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Hansen. Can you tell me how many county social workers are practicing today without a BA or graduate degree in social work or don't hold a license? Is that a significant number?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. There are currently only four counties that are doing what we heard our county commissioner here testify to today. So this is happening across the state. I don't have a number for exactly how many there are, but we do know that there are four counties where the sky has not fallen, and it is possible to do this.
Representative Ndo, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. And I think there that it's some if it's Hennepin versus Nicollet is one of those four counties, that could be a big deal. But I'll move on. So confirm for me that a county, I'm going to give you a scenario, a county employee who's 30 years old, who's currently titled, they currently hold a title of social worker, but they don't have a BA, they don't have a graduate degree, they're not a licensed social worker. Tell me how this bill would affect that 30-year-old county employee.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And I did just get the number from one of my hand signalers from the side over here. There is about 5,000 social workers in the counties. The counties that are doing this currently are Nicollet, Lake, Cook, and Candy, Ohio. So pretty big counties, especially in the rural neck of the woods. To answer your question about the scenario you posed, that worker would undergo with the county a change in their title. And so we know that our child protection system, we serve on this committee together, so you know how much work I've done on that. That system is really trying to focus on family preservation. So an example I've thrown out there would be that perhaps this person's title would be changed to something like a family preservation specialist or a family support specialist or something like that. So their title in that sense would change. Their duties likely would not, though.
Follow.
So, and just
Representative
Doe. So when I combine those two things, so there's roughly 5,000. There's 5,000 county employees that will have to undergo a title change, or estimated 5,000 county employees that are going to have to go through a title change if this bill passes.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, 5,000 people will have to accurately represent themselves to the public, and will have to accurately, state that they are not actually licensed nor educated in social work. That, I think, speaks to the problem that's before us and why this bill is so important, is that's the depth of how many people across the state of Minnesota are receiving services from somebody that is being represented as something, unfortunately, they're not. These are very valuable workers. They are important and critical people to serving our constituents across the state. So this is not to water down the importance of their job or of those positions, but it does speak to how widespread this issue is. This was originally put in place back in the mid-80s, and it was intended to sunset shortly after, because the original intention was to offer a bridge when licensure became more prominent. I do have somebody from the social work chapter here, the National Association of Social Workers here in Minnesota, if you'd like her to answer any specific questions too.
Representative Ndo is done with his questioning. So
I just don't need the national person. I've got
one final
question, and then I'm done.
Okay, Representative Ndo.
So now I'm concerned. All right, I'm kind of supportive of where you're going, but now all of a sudden I'm worried that there's going to be 5,000 people that are providing services to our vulnerable populations that may not be able to do that. So can you answer that? And I'm done after this. So thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I have high confidence in the folks who are providing those services to continue to provide those services. I have high confidence in our counties who need those services and those workers who do that to continue to do that. There's a reason that there's not somebody here from that area opposing this either, right? So there's voices in this argument that will say that. You and I have talked about this many times before, and so your support was something I had anticipated, and so I'm a little sad to hear you tell me now that that's not necessarily the case. So if you'd like to continue conversations, I'm totally happy to do that, but we really did try to make sure that social workers in everybody's district came to talk to them about this just last week in Social Worker Day on the Hill, and this is just really making sure, again, that the title is protected, that people who see the title social worker know that they have that education and that background. So I'll leave it at that, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. I'd like to just kind of go back to the county piece of it, the 5,000 folks that are doing the work right now. Would it make it harder for people in the future? I know that it's beginning, it's July 1st, 2026 on line 1.13, that this change happens, the title changes. But what I hear you saying is that the workload will be the same, it'll just be their title will be different. So I'm curious, will it prevent, you know, as Chair Liebling has talked about as well too, will it prevent situations from happening or inspiring more people to get into this field because there will be a licensure piece attached to it?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Gilman. I think that people go into these fields because they have big hearts. I don't think it's a title that draws them. I think the title is helpful for a lot of people. But I also just wanted to point out the dates that are in here because you mentioned that.
Yep.
That these are, this is going to go into effect for people hired after that point, right?
Okay, yep.
And so there's no one's going to really like use their title if they're hired afterwards. So in terms of new employees, right, those dates are really important. So I guess my answer should depend on when they were hired. If they're hired tomorrow, might be a different answer than if they're hired in next year, this time next year.
I'll just do a follow-up question.
Yeah, Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. And I don't know who this question would be to, but just curious, of the social work field and those looking to be an actual social worker and get the license, where are we sitting on average with schooling? Are people going into this profession? Has there been a decline, as we've seen decline in a lot of college situations? Like, where are we at with this? What is going to attract more people in? And I want to go back to, we desperately need to invest in our IT around this, because I also think that that's a hindrance that's not in this bill.
Yeah.
But how are we going to take those folks that are already doing the work? Would they be inspired to go on and do more schooling for that? And where are we at with school programs?
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you again, Representative Gilman. You have tapped into my favorite thing to talk about. So right now we have seen a 25% increased growth in the number of social workers getting licensed, thanks to our provisional licensing path that we passed as a body last year. And so that's exciting. In terms of where are we at as a workforce, by 2030, we are going to be 30,000 social workers short. For context, we're approximately 30,000 police officers short, and that has caused a lot of concerns for folks. And I have been working really hard for the last couple of years to improve that workforce and increase it. I serve on the Higher Education Committee, where we have these conversations as well, and so finding the incentives to think about adding social workers to our workforce grant programs and other incentives for school, including paid internships. That's a big reason that a lot of folks get a little leery about going to school for any professional degree, is because they have to do an internship. In our case, for social work, it is quite a bit. And so making sure folks are being reimbursed for that labor so that they at least get something for it, so they're not working completely for free and can balance their lives as well, is important. I would love to team up if you're interested in that, and how we can continue to bring in more. We, like I said, have increased the number with the provisional licensing pathway that was opened last year, so that's probably the most exciting piece.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious how much conversation you've had with rural counties, rural administrators, rural county commissioners on this proposed bill.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. This conversation has been going on for 40 years, so it has definitely been come up a lot, especially in rural Minnesota. And this is like one of the challenges, right, is that folks in rural Minnesota, there is a social work shortage there. And so by having these titles, people are excited, like, oh, I get to work with a social worker. But unfortunately, a lot of them aren't what they're expecting. And so I think this is particularly important. Like I said, the four counties that I've mentioned that are doing this are Nicollet, Lake, Cook, and Kandi Ohi. And so out in rural Minnesota, they have figured out how to do this. I've talked to folks down in Rochester, really like around the state, Duluth, Moorhead. A lot of folks have come to the table on this. And social workers from districts around the state have also reached out to many of you. I'm sure you'll remember those conversations too. And so I always encourage folks to talk to the social workers in their community to get the best on the ground sense and not just to take my word for it.
Follow up, Representative Ben Bintrigan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have spoke with some of my commissioners in my counties, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm concerned about the cost of this. You know, we've got, you know, you don't have a fiscal note on this bill, but there clearly will be an additional cost in the long run to local taxpayers. I have full support in my county commissioners. I think they can they know their needs more than we do here. And I don't see where the system is broke. And you know, if you could point to me some evidence where we've got a broken system, but this has not been a top priority from what I've been hearing from my county commissioners. My county commissioners are concerned about the mandates, the rules, the laws, the restraints that we're passing from this place on down, and it's going to our counties and then it's going to our local taxpayers. So, you know, that's my comment. Thank you, sir.
Representative Hansen, any comment to the comment?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you again for the question. I would encourage you to talk to your social workers because I think that they're the most important voices on this. In our negotiations, we talked about costs, and part of the negotiations was that this was a cost neutral impact for them. So this is something that has come up. I've not just simply overlooked it. It's that in the negotiations on this, in my time here for the last 6-5 years, this has been something that we all agreed on was not something they wanted to see here. So, and again, if those county commissioners want to come talk to me, I'd be happy to introduce them to some folks in their area. And I think in terms of not heard any issues, I think, you know, we've talked pretty extensively about that people are using a title that the general public thinks is licensed or accountable to a professional board, but actually isn't. And to me, licensure, part of that is about establishing public trust and public safety. And that's what these boards are there for. So to me, that's an issue, and maybe we disagree on that. But I think that is protecting the public for transparency purposes, I do think is something that this body should be concerned about.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And our number one job in any of this is to protect the public. And I am all about licensing, so Mr. Chair, I'd like to call for a roll call.
Roll call has been called.
So, as somebody that has always had to go through certification for my medical side of my life and also as a realtor, I expect that I stand behind my title. Protecting the title has become so important, and we saw it last summer. We need to make sure that a public safety officer is not a police officer. We need to make sure a nurse is not a nurse's aide. We need to go down this list of where we've titled people just to make people comfortable, and we got to stick by titles. I hope you guys understand where I'm going with this. Titles are important because if there is a license behind a title, and I understand in this one she compromised a little bit. I'm with Representative Liebling on this. If we have a license, then we have somebody to hold accountable for the actions they took against a patient or somebody vulnerable. This whole area works in vulnerability. I've worked with social workers pretty much my whole life, from ERs to out on the street. And Representative Hansen, thank you so much for bringing this. It's a step in the right direction. I get it. The counties probably are not going to like this, but give them another title. You don't have to give them a title as social worker. You can call them community health workers. I think that's the latest one. So right now, I think that to hear this debate over, well, the counties aren't going to like this, or to say it's okay to call somebody a social worker that's working on the job, social worker is a social worker. They play a very key role in patient care. They play a very key role in what we do, and they should have the liability for that too. This will make us know, as a state, who we're going to nerf. Our job is licensing. It's not the county's job. It's nobody else's job. It actually sits within this committee when we're touching a healthcare situation. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant, Chair, but that's really where I'm at.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, any follow-up comments to that?
Thank you, Chair. Anyone? And I thank you, Representative Hugh. I really appreciate that. I mean, working in the community with crisis workers, that is a really important role for folks. And again, I just want to make sure that we're looking at the dates in here. I mentioned that in my original comments. And so, like, if somebody has questions about the dates in this bill, like, please let me know. I'm happy to answer them and, like, how they apply. But I appreciate Representative Hewitt's comments and agree with everything he said.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author. I do appreciate some of the comments made by Representative Hewitt already. I do think social workers serve a very important role in that patient care continuum, and that's really important. So I think this is probably a really good step. Well, not probably. It is a good step in the right direction. The one question I'm hoping that you can clarify for me that I'm still struggling with just a little bit, and I think it's a little bit related to what Chair Liebling said, is this question about having the degree but not the license. And I'm a little bit struggling with the concept of that and why we would have folks who have the degree but not the license. I'm not sure what circumstance would create that. Or how widespread that is, I guess, is what I'm not clear on. And I will just say, you know, well, I respect the bill as it is, and I understand you had to make some compromises. I'm just going to throw out there that my thought would be that at some point we should phase in the fact that the folks who have this degree should, in fact, have licensure. Because to the point that Representative Hewitt made, this is about accountability, and it's about public trust. And I really think that if you're going to be using that title and you have the degree of that title, that you should get that licensure. Now, I don't know what the barriers are to getting it, but maybe you can speak to that and help cover that just a little bit.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Bonner. And again, this, I agree, like, licensure is probably the best thing, but the reality is that, yes, in negotiations, we had some of this. We don't want to decimate the workforce either. You know, we don't want folks to go away. We do want to incentivize people who have degrees to get to licensure. What you're asking of workers in that case, in this transition, is the added cost that they will have to pay for licensure and then the added supervision, which is, it is a cost, and we wanted to be sensitive to that. We're not trying to burden anybody by doing this, right? The goal is really to get title accuracy for social workers, and we're going to keep going there. I'm not going anywhere. This is work that I've said I will do, as I mentioned, about on the Higher Education Committee and finding ways that we can incentivize folks to do that. Maybe we find, you know, funds to help pay for some of that licensure, something like that. I'm completely open to that. But for now, the transition starting here is there. So again, like the dates here, you know, the first date is when the end of the hiring of that title would go, and then the second date with the 27 date, that's the retroactive date, so anybody that wasn't on board before that wouldn't be able to use the title. So to the point of the 5,000, it is still going to be a transition over time until these folks aren't there, like that were hired before these dates. And so we are just starting what, you know, like I said, was intended to sunset many, many moons ago. And so this was supposed to be long behind us. But now we are finally starting to let that sunset on this.
One follow-up, Representative Bonner, and then we're going to hear from two more members, and then we will move to the vote.
Thank you. I'll be quick. I just was curious, do we have a ballpark on, like, what is the cost barrier or what that cost is to getting licensure? I'm just trying to understand the scope of the challenge, I guess. But thank you for the bill.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. The cost to get a license is a couple hundred dollars, and then the supervision depends on what the cost of the supervisor is charging per hour. I'm actually going through that process right now myself because I'm now interested in getting my license since I have the degree. So I can certainly loop back with you and show you my receipts if you're interested.
Representative Zelaznikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. My question is on to the representative. It has been this way for 40 years, and so in my experience in working with counties in social work, coordinating care for many people of many ages. I'm curious as to why now. That's one of my questions. After 40 years, it's been set up this way within the county. So I'm just curious as to why the impetus now with all the things that the counties are grappling with, that we're tackling this right now this year. So if you could give me some feedback.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Zeleznikar. I've been working on this since I got elected, so this has been something we've been doing, but also addressing like the workforce issues, like the provisional licensing thing I did last year. I didn't want to just, you know, not do one thing without the other, and so the timing right now is right. They've picked the dates here that are in the bill, so they are comfortable with that. Or taking a neutral position on that. And, you know, I think, like, the why now part of it is because it's time. It's time to right some of the wrongs of the past. Like I said, this was always intended to sunset a long time ago in the 90s. And so we're a little late to the game here. So, you know, we want to try to get this across the finish line now. And, again, you know, I want to highlight these dates, that there's this retroactive piece of it. So, you know, county social workers in St. Louis County will continue to use that if they work there today. It's really just going to be folks who are hired afterwards and going forward like that. So we still will have a long transition period for however long the careers of these folks are.
Follow-up, Representative Zeleznikar, one follow-up.
Yep, thank you, Chair, and thank you. To that point, I mean, I'm torn on this. I can see both sides. I can understand the issue that that you bring forth, and Representative Liebling and the rest, I understand the licensure. My concern is also to not having the licensure part in this, only the degree. And if we're going to go that way with the degree, then I'm wondering why you wouldn't consider psychology degrees, health administration degrees, nursing degrees, because there's many people that work in these capacities that may not be they may or may not be licensed also, but they had a background in that education. So it's just making me try to understand this, if you could help me.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. So social workers are different than psychologists, are different than county mental health, all of that, and their titles are protected. So you can't call yourself a psychologist if you don't have that degree, right? I'm sorry, can you repeat the other part of your question?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is really that they're not licensed, correct? They wouldn't be a psychologist. They just went to school studying psychology, similar to what you're saying this bill is. They have went to school for social worker, but they're not licensed. So there's no misrepresenting yourself. Yeah. I just went to school for 4 years in psychology, or I went to school for 4 years in health administration, or I went to school for four, you know. There are people I know that went to school for nursing but didn't take their boards. They're not licensed either, but they're working in these capacities. So I guess that's where I'm torn on this. If we're not doing the licensure, why are we being real prescriptive with these four-year degrees?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. I forgot that part of your question, so thank you for reminding me. I would love to do just licensure, but again, negotiations happen how negotiations happen. I would love for anybody who feels like that should be the case to join me in those negotiations and make those cases and to tell, you know, anybody who will listen to you that same thing. I wanted to come to the table in good faith, and I wanted to come to the table in a way that could get us all on the same page to at least protect our title going forward as best as we can, you know, and negotiations have to be made. I mean, nothing here is as Puritan as we want to think.
Final question, Representative Chair Becker.
Thank you. It's really a statement, and thank you, Representative Hansen. You know, we don't ask farmers to get a BS in farming. Educational program in agriculture can teach tiling, but you learn about drainage out on the street. And it's a learned trait. So I don't think none of us want farmers to be called food growers. So I understand the intent, but there's practicality when you deal with social working that you have to work with people in the field that's not learned because you have a BS in a certain degree and so forth. So that's my comments. I know what you're trying to do. I appreciate it. I just don't think we're quite there with this compromise. So I will be able to know.
Closing comments, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I mean, to that point, I think like this is a 125-year-old profession, right? The state has decided that this is a licensed profession. That's the state of Minnesota has already decided. They have not decided that farming ought to be a licensed profession. Thank goodness. So I will just say that I appreciate everyone taking the time to sit in this. It is a little bit of a new conversation, but like I said, I hope that a lot of the social workers from your communities have come and talked to you about this. I appreciate all of you who took time to meet with them on their behalf. I'll say thank you for that. It really means a lot, and I look forward to your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen renews her motion that 3454 be recommended to be placed on the general register. We will go to a vote. Sinab, if you would, please.
Yes. Chair Bierman?
Aye.
Chair Backer?
No.
Vice Chair Weyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nadeau?
Yes.
I'm torn. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Carroll?
Carroll, did you say?
Yes.
Aye.
Representative DePell?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Franson?
No.
Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Representative Lee?
Yes.
Representative Hewitt?
Yes.
Representative Keeler?
Yes.
Representative Knudsen?
No.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Mahmoud?
Yes.
Representative Perriman?
No.
Representative Purcell?
Purcell, aye.
Representative Rubinsky?
No.
Representative Schumacher?
Aye.
Representative Van Binsbergen?
No.
And Representative Zelensnikar?
Aye.
All right, we have a vote of 15 to 7. The motion prevails, and you are on your way to the General Register, Representative Hansen. The next bill we have on would be Representative Mahmoud, House File 3917, Medication Repository Program. If you could make your way to the podium. As a member of the committee, you can move your bill. Are you ready to move your bill?
Yes, Chair. I'd like to move my bill.
Representative Mahmoud moves that House File 3917 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Mahmoud, I understand you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move and explain that amendment, please?
Yes, the A1 amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment, which makes allows funding that the repository has an appropriation of $450,000 available to use to expand business.
Representative Mahmoud moves the adoption of the A1. Any discussion to the A1? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? No opposed. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Mahmoud, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. House File 3917. This bill will help the repository operate more efficiently by reducing unnecessary record-keeping records and expanding its business model, allowing it to serve more Minnesotans in need of medication. The repository receives a large volume of donated drugs, many of which cannot be accepted. Under current requirements, the organization must keep records, even for drugs that it does not accept. This bill removes that requirement, allowing the staff to focus their time and resources on distributing as many usable medications as they can by reducing this administrative burden and frees up funds. This bill will help the repository expand its operation and provide needed medication to more Minnesotans. And to that, I'd like to move on to our testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Mahmoud. We'll move to testifiers. We have with us today Dr. Mann from Roundtable RX. If you would introduce yourself and please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, chairs and members of this committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Rowan Mann. I'm a pharmacist and I lead the Minnesota Medication Repository Program, also known as Roundtable RX. Before I go into the legislation, I want to just give a brief background in the impact of Roundtable RX. It is estimated that Minnesotans destroy approximately $16 million worth of usable medications each year from long-term care facilities alone. These medications are often prepackaged in tamper-evident bubble packs, but when therapies changes, such as a dose adjustment, discontinuations, or even if the patient just has a hospitalizations, those medications are thrown away while they are not expired, they're still safe, they are required to be destroyed. At the same time, as everyone on this committee knows, many Minnesotans are struggling to afford the medications they need. The repository works to address both these problems. Roundtable RX is able to accept these medications that would have been thrown away, have those medications undergo a safety check by a licensed pharmacist, and redistribute the medications then to individuals in need instead of destroying them. This program operates under contract and oversight of the Board of Pharmacy. The way we are able to get medications out to people in need are through the partnerships we have with pharmacies and clinics throughout the state that serve the underserved populations. We currently have dispensing partners in 26 Minnesotan counties. Of those 26 counties, 20 of them are rural. To date, we have served thousands of Minnesotans and redistributed millions of dollars in medications. We have kept over 5 million doses out of landfills in the water stream. In this fiscal year, the program is operating at approximately a 3-to-1 return, meaning for every dollar invested, we have distributed $3 worth of medications to individuals who otherwise just would not have received care. We are kind of, we're a safety net program, but we're kind of the last stop for a lot of these patients. And I'm here today for two practical requests. First, a technical administration clarification. Current language requires full destruction documentation, even for medications that were never accepted into the repository inventory. We are requesting clarification so destruction record keeping applies only to medications formally accepted into the program. This reduces unnecessary administrative burden and paperwork, and it does not change safety or oversight at all. I also want to make sure that I note that I've reviewed this proposed clarification with the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy, the MPCA, and Hennepin County. Those are the three regulatory agencies that cover our program and just hazardous waste in general, and there were no compliance concerns from those regulatory partners. Second, we are requesting flexibility to use funds that have already been appropriated to support operational cost necessary to fully deliver medications to patients, specifically cost associated with operating a compliant home delivery pharmacy model. This would improve access for rural and mobility-limited patients, increase efficiency of statewide distribution, and support Minnesota pharmacy operations using resources the legislature has already provided. This is about responsible stewardship, reducing waste, removing unnecessary red tape, and making full use of resources already in the system. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Mann. Any members of the public willing to wishing to testify, please? Seeing none, we'll go to discussion of the bill. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I've been very supportive of this program, and we've had lots of conversations, and I've expressed my hesitation. We're getting very close to moving from a repository to a pharmacy. With this bill and with the amendment that adds, authorizes additional expenditures for labor, for other things. And for the committee, can you just talk about the sustainability? I can't see you. This is a grant-funded program that I think this committee we were unanimous in our support of this. But it's changing it a little bit with the amendment. Can you talk about the sustainability of this going forward? What's going to keep you from having to come back to the legislature asking for additional funds?
Dr. Mann.
Yes, thank you so much for that question. So I think something that we're always doing is working with different foundations and grant agencies. So we are always trying to get additional funding. I think something that this funding would help us would really be to show the proof of concept that there are many counties that I can't partner with because the way I get meds to patients are through free clinics or clinics that serve the underserved or independent pharmacies. Some counties in Minnesota just do not have those, and so I struggle to help patients in those counties even though I'm a full statewide program and I want to get everyone medications that they need. So I know that the need's out there. I know that this funding would be able to get those medications to those patients, which will just continue to strengthen the support as we continue to operate and continue to get more funding from grants and foundations.
Follow up, Representative Nadeau.
Yeah, and thank you for that. I'm going to support this today. I don't know where it's going because I did before. It's an expansion. I'm a little bit hesitant, but I know that what you're trying to do is super important. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
I see no other questions. I do have a question, Dr. Mann. Could you compare the size of the Minnesota Repository Program to some of the other ones in the country as far as size? I'm thinking.
Yeah. That's a great question. So we are probably, I would say, in the top, definitely top 10 of repositories and getting very close to being in the top 5. Iowa is the one that I always talk about, SafenetRx. They are currently bigger than us, and they are serving quite a larger population than us. They have also been operating for close to 25 years, so they've got a little bit of a head start. And something that they were able to do, which is why they are so much larger than us, is they have their home delivery pharmacy model operating in conjunction with their repository. So that's that one. For the ones that don't have that, we are pretty similar in size in the way that we're able to get the products out. Georgia's the other one I think of, but they also have a home delivery. So, but we are going to keep expanding no matter what.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I, like Representative Nadeau, of course, I've always supported the program and, you know, was glad to see it move kind of under the Board of Pharmacy as a contracted program where it's, you know, this isn't just a grant to a nonprofit. This is, we're now in the posture of actually contracting with the program to provide these services for the state, which I think is a little bit different. But my question to you, Dr. Mann, is sort of the how it happened that you got the appropriation last year during the budget year, and it was apparent, was it just not written correctly into the bill, or is there a change in how you're actually using, you know, in the intention to, like, how did we end up in this situation where, you know, we, according to the what we've got before us, you got an appropriation of $450,000 in the first year and $450,000 in the second year of the biennium, and it was for to purchase medications to fill gaps, essentially, and now you're asking to change that and broaden the use, and I just wonder if you could explain, kind of, was it an error? What was the, where's the disconnect there?
Dr. Mann.
Yes, thank you so much. That's also a really great question. So I think last year we had wanted to change. There was a policy change that we were hoping to go through where we would be allowed to purchase medications. The way it was written previously, even if we had funding that wasn't the state, or with state funding, we were not allowed to purchase medications. All of our, everything in our inventory was supposed to be donated. And we wanted the option to be allowed to purchase some medications to fill in gaps. And there was a lot of discussion on that portion of it. And I think when we were here presenting about that, there was a miscommunication on our side where it seemed that we were asking for money specifically for that, when really we were trying to just be allowed to, so that we could have really small gaps that we filled in. We didn't mean that to have it explicitly be $450,000 only on purchasing medications. That doesn't really align with our mission of making sure we're primarily focused on donated medications, and that we're using a source of medications that would have been thrown away to help patients in need. And that is such a, I'm very appreciative of the belief that we could use that much for it, but I don't think it would be in line with the program, and I don't want to go outside of our mission. But I know that if that funding was distributed to us, that I could continue to expand even further, and that's always my goal, to help as many Minnesotans as possible.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. That does help, because I do remember the whole issue about could you actually purchase drugs in addition, and so it sounds like just kind of a little, things got crossed in a little bit, but I know that because you are a contractor of the state, of the Board of Pharmacy, to provide these services, that, you know, a contract requires some kind of an appropriation, even if it isn't covering all of your expenses. So I don't know, you know, I don't think I was involved in the amount discussion, but it makes sense to me what you're trying to do, so thank you.
Closing comments, Representative Mahmoud.
Yes, thank you, members. This is an important bill to ensure more Minnesotans are thriving, so please support.
Representative Mahmoud renews her motion that House File 3917, as amended, be referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? And the motion carries. House File 3917 is recommended to be placed on the General Register as amended. Next up, House File... Oh, I'm sorry. It is to be referred to Ways and Means. Correction. Next bill on the agenda is House File 2906. Representative Smith, if you could make your way to the table. Welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 2906 be referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Smith, I understand you have a DE1 amendment. Would you explain the amendment, please?
That is correct, Chair. In a lot of conversations in the interim with other representatives and senators, including Representative West, we've had many changes to the bill, which is why we have a full DE amendment. It's probably best to talk about it in the course of the whole bill since it is a delete-all.
All right. I move the adoption of the DE1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We will move to your opening statement, please, Representative Smith.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Behrman, and thank you, committee, for hearing this very, very important bill. No one in this committee I know would question the fact that mental illness is one of the defining issues in our society today. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 1 in 5 U.S. adults experienced mental illness last year, and those numbers are only growing. And the horrors of mental illness are bad enough on their own to those who experience them, but the trickle-down health negative impacts are huge. Risks of cardiometabolic disease is up to 2 times higher in people with mental illness compared to the general population. People with depression have a 40% higher risk of developing cardiac disease, hypertension, stroke, diabetes, or obesity than the general population. 34.5% of U.S. adults with mental illness also have a substance use disorder. And today in this committee, we are talking about a new tool, a therapeutic psilocybin program here in Minnesota that has great potential. It will help Minnesotans who are struggling with a wide variety of mental illnesses, from substance use disorder, depression, PTSD, anxiety, chronic pain, and more. This bill meets with the recommendations the legislature received from the Psychedelic Medicine Task Force report that we received last year, and it builds on successful programs in other states like Oregon, Colorado, and New Mexico. It also builds on the USDA's designation of psilocybin as a breakthrough therapy, which of course is itself built upon decades of work from researchers and clinicians on the drug. If you have questions on the science of this, by the way, we won't be able to cover this as much as we'd like in this committee. I strongly recommend checking out the Psychedelic Medicine Task Force Committee legislative report. It is incredibly thorough. You'll be hearing from some of the committee members to testify today. It's really, really helpful. I think the easiest way to explain this bill is by talking about how a Minnesotan would have access to this treatment. The first step, assuming they are 21 years old or older, is receiving a diagnosis of a qualified medical condition for the program by a healthcare practitioner. The potential patient would then fill out a health screener and risk evaluation to make sure that it would be safe for them to take the drug and wouldn't be complicated by other medical conditions or drugs that they are taking. They would then submit an application to the Department of Health for admittance to the psilocybin program. If they are accepted, they would receive more information on the program, the drug itself, how it would be administered, as well as a consent waiver that they must sign and return to the department saying that they understand and they do consent to the treatment. Then they may pay a fee and receive a card stating their enrollment in the program for a period of 12 months. To receive a treatment, an enrollee must consume the psilocybin at a licensed facility with a licensed facilitator present during the session, although there are some exemptions in the bill for those who have trouble and have accessibility needs. The treatment would take place in 3 phases. A preparation session where the patient would come in, prepare for the treatment, again give verbal and written consent to the treatment that they understand. Second, an administrative session where the psilocybin would actually be ingested and experienced. And an integration session after that where a patient would receive psychotherapy to integrate the experience into their healing process. This 3-phase structure is drawn from the best practice in psychotherapy and other clinical trials. Much of the rulemaking will be done by the Commissioner of Health, but also includes licensure process for both the facilitator and the facility itself. There is also an interagency agreement in the bill with the Office of Cannabis Management in three specific areas to help administration: oversight of the patient registries, facilitator registries, and the cultivation and testing of the drug itself, which is usually found in mushrooms. There's also some broad guidelines, knowing this is a new field of study and praxis. So in the first 3 years, there's not going to be more than 1,000 patients approved, 50 registered facilitators approved, and 3 testing facilities approved. We also asked the department reevaluate the entire program at the end of 3 years to see how it can be improved. I know it is quite a hefty amendment, and I apologize for that, but the vast majority of that is rescheduling. It is rescheduling in our state laws, psilocybin from Schedule 1 down to a Schedule 4, and when you change one of those numbers, you have to change all of those numbers, so that's why the list is so long there at the end. I know that's a lot, members, but this is a really, really important area and a lifeline to many Minnesotans. If you're not going to listen to me, please, please listen to the testimony you'll hear today. They're the voices that really matter here, people who are getting help that they thought they would never get, people saying, like, they have a new lease on life, that they thought they wouldn't make it, and now they are because of these drugs. It is those stories that has kept this largely bipartisan. I'm so thankful for my co-author here, Rep. Nolan West, and Senator Mark Curran in the Senate, as well as many others I've had great conversations with across the board here on this committee and elsewhere. Thank you for your consideration, and we'll be happy to stand for questions. And Chair, if that's okay, could we have a brief statement from Representative West?
We would be more than pleased to have a brief statement from our distinguished colleague here who has part of this bill and presenting today, so please proceed, Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that introduction. I'm very distinguished. And you can tell my experience as a legislator far outweighs that of the author of the bill because I did not come empty-handed. So, one thing I want to highlight about this bill in particular is pilot program. I think a lot of the, when somebody hears about this initially and thinks, hey, medicinal cannabis program, a lot of criticism of that is, oh, it's the nose under the camel's tent for legalization and whatnot. This is a pilot program. Also, the current federal commissioner of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy, has been supportive of more than just psilocybin in use as treatment for depression and other things. So the federal government is looking at this right now. And they're also Republicans. And lastly, the looking at the most difficult things to treat, treatment-resistant depression, to where you have people who have experienced things that most of us here couldn't possibly imagine, who simply cannot be reached. There has been a lot of work done showing how the psilocybin, among other drugs of the same category, has had tremendous effect in allowing them to actually receive therapy and break through what used to be an impenetrable wall into their psyche. In particular, this is our veterans, first responders, and others who are do see horrible things for the betterment of our society. So with that.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative West. We'll move to testifiers, and we have a long list of testifiers, so we will hold to a strict two-minute length, and I will announce the first three, Dr. Jessica Nielsen, Dr. Patty Dickman, and Miranda Milbauer, if you would make your way toward the table. When you are ready, Dr. Nielsen, if you would introduce yourself. Introduce yourself and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, esteemed members of this health committee. My name is Dr. Jessica Nielsen. I have a PhD in neuroscience, was a tenure-track assistant professor at the University of Minnesota, and the principal investigator of the first clinical trial with psilocybin in Minnesota and founder and president of the Psychedelic Society of Minnesota. I was appointed by the governor and elected to serve as chairperson for the Psychedelic Medicine Task Force that was created in 2023 by the legislature and published a 200-page legislative report last year describing our recommendations to expand access to psilocybin to psychedelic medicines, particularly psilocybin-containing mushrooms. I'm here today testifying in support of HF2906 to create a psilocybin therapy pilot program here in Minnesota based on one of those recommendations. While the clinical trials with psilocybin are showing extraordinary promise and outperforming currently available treatment options on the path towards FDA approval, we cannot wait for an FDA-approved pharmaceutical version of a treatment that readily exists in nature, has been used safely for thousands of years worldwide by indigenous cultures, and is already widely used out in the community, including other states like Oregon, Colorado, and New Mexico, who have legalized therapeutic access to psilocybin mushrooms. People are not well. Currently available therapies don't work for everyone, and options that are available can be cost prohibitive, depending on levels of access and insurance coverage. Clinicians are frustrated about the limited tools at their disposal to help their patients heal. We need more options and tools in the toolkit. I personally know 5 people who have taken their own life over the past year. I can't help but wonder if their lives could have been saved if there were more effective options for them to access, especially when a viable alternative with psilocybin mushrooms is widely available, yet currently illegal to access. I have also personally healed from severe depression with psilocybin mushrooms after suffering multiple traumatic miscarriages in recent years. I have both the lived experience and the professional credentials to speak on the healing power of psilocybin mushrooms. We should enact HF2906 to create a regulated, supervised access pilot program with psilocybin mushrooms to treat severe mental health conditions. Please support this legislation and help Minnesotans find their path to wellness. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nielsen. Next up, Dr. Patty Dickman, and followed by Miranda Milbauer.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Dr. Patty Dickman. I'm a physician who's double board certified in psychiatry and addiction medicine. I spent the first decade of my career serving as a medical director of the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. In that capacity, I was medical director for addiction recovery services, our opioid treatment program, as well as our homeless clinic. During my time at the VA, I was fortunate to work on teams who healed thousands of veterans. And what sticks with me are the veterans who unfortunately did not get better, those with difficult to treat depression, difficult to treat trauma. And for veterans who shot a battle buddy by accident or had to shoot a mother in the face in Fallujah, our medications sometimes just are not enough. And our best evidence-based therapies are not enough. And despite the efforts of my very talented colleagues, sometimes our options just are insufficient, and it really breaks our hearts as clinicians. I truly see psilocybin as a evidence-based treatment that can help prevent suicide, that can help prevent overdose deaths, that can keep families together, and that can support employment. As an addiction psychiatrist, I have not once in my career seen anyone with an addiction to psilocybin. I consider it to be very low abuse potential, very low dependence potential. This substance helps people go deeper into their feelings, and most of the time when people struggle with addiction, it's they're numbing emotions. They want to avoid feelings, and this actually does the opposite. It allows people to go deeper, to process through traumas, to help feel unstuck. So I currently co-own a psychiatry practice on the edge of the U of M campus with an emphasis in working with first responders. Similarly, we owe it to our first responders, our veterans, and other community members to move forward with this pilot project. And for that reason, I'm in strong support of HF2906. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Dickman. Next up, Miranda Milbauer.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I apologize. Yes. Could I ask that Stefan Egan, he's one of my testifiers, has to leave at 2:15. Could he slip in?
Stefan Egan?
That's correct, yeah.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair.
So Stefan Egan will be next. I'm not sure if Miranda is here, but next will be Adam Tomczyk.
Wanted to make sure you got your voice.
Please take your place, introduce yourself, and proceed with your 2-minute testimony, please.
Chair and committee, thank you for the time. My name is Stefan Egan, a selected member of the Minnesota Psychedelic Task Force, convened in 2023. I currently reside in Chisago County, Minnesota, with businesses operating in 4 other counties across the state. I say this in an effort to emphasize the potential positive impact this bill could have. Access to this molecule saved my life. I served 5 combat deployments as a counterintelligence agent with the U.S. Joint Special Operations Command. That time abroad led to both physical and mental trauma that ultimately led me down the paths of addiction and suicide attempts. Physical trauma from gunshot wounds to the chest, several IED blasts that led to 6 open brain lesions that would not heal under current VA and Army protocols. Unlike many of my brothers and sisters in arms, I was provided with the opportunity to use psilocybin in a therapeutic manner, albeit from the illicit market, but therapeutic nonetheless. Without that access, I wouldn't be here. Those brain lesions healed, brain cells reconnected, and I could function. What was labeled as complex PSD back in 2015 is now referred to as operator syndrome, a new, more defined and specific set of behavioral characteristics that made it very difficult to treat. The mental trauma can be imagined just as profound, if not more, than the physical. In order to find my way to stay alive, I had to be willing to risk my freedom, a freedom that I willingly fought for countless times. That risk, although it shouldn't be a necessary risk, allowed me to view the world through a new set of eyes. It allowed me the ability to look at the trauma through a different perspective, ultimately enabling me to be a functional and flourishing member of society. It enabled me to be a good husband, a successful business owner, and a good member of my community. In the past 4 weeks alone, I've lost 3 team members. In the last 12 months, there's been 14 total. Half of a platoon just gone. Men and women who were trained to move like the wind in the night, find solutions to the world's most complex of problems, among the nation's best and among the most highly capable in the world. Yet they stood incapable of navigating the complexities of their trauma, a trauma that ultimately led them down a very familiar path that I was fortunate to avoid. Had they had the same access, had they had the opportunity, had it been available to them, legally and regulated, they could possibly be where I am. Building industry, building communities, building families, and functioning. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up would be Adam Tomczyk, followed by Eric Young. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony for 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Adam Tomczyk. I also served on the Psychedelic Medicine Task Force, representing patients with treatment-resistant mental health conditions. Professionally, I'm an attorney. I've spent the past 14 years working as a prosecutor in the Twin Cities, prosecuting almost exclusively violent crimes. I'm proud to speak in favor of the bipartisan House File 2906 to create a small, highly regulated trial program of psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy. I personally benefited from ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, which is currently legal in Minnesota. That therapy helped me quit drinking alcohol and helped me address debilitating symptoms stemming from complex post-traumatic stress disorder. But ketamine does not work for all patients. A great amount of clinical research shows that psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy is effective in addressing depression, PTSD, substance use disorder, and many other conditions. This bill creates a small, trial, highly regulated program with a maximum of 1,000 patients, maximum of 50 providers. The bill contains robust safeguards to ensure the safety of patients, of the general public, and of Minnesota's children. This bill will save lives. Psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy is a safe and effective treatment to combat the main drivers of the deaths of despair that we've just heard about from the past 3 testifiers. Psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy helped me get better personally. Now I am here to help other people. On behalf of all Minnesotans who are suffering, I urge you to unlock this tool to provide help and to provide hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tomczyk. Next up, Eric Young, followed by David Luce. Please state your name for the committee and proceed with your 2-minute testimony when you are ready, please.
Hello, my name is Eric Young. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Young. I am a Minnesota resident, a U.S. Navy veteran, and a student at St. Catharines University pursuing a career in medicine. I am originally from the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans and was directly impacted by Hurricane Katrina. Experiences like that have shaped my understanding of trauma and mental health. I support Minnesota House File 2906 because it creates a safe and regulated pathway for psilocybin therapy while allowing Minnesota to collect important data on safety and effectiveness. Many veterans and individuals struggling with PTSD, depression, and trauma are searching for new treatment options when traditional therapies have not worked. A carefully regulated pilot program allows Minnesota to move forward responsibly while expanding access to potentially life-changing mental health treatments. As someone pursuing a career in healthcare, I believe programs like this represent an important step toward addressing the mental health crisis with evidence-based approaches. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Young. Next up, David Loos, and then followed by Dr. Kim on deck. Please be seated, state your name, and proceed with your two-minute testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is David Loos. I'm a born and raised Minnesotan and current St. Paul resident. I'm also the founding president of Frontline Bud Foundation, which is a nonprofit based here in Minnesota. We're dedicated to helping veterans like myself explore cannabis and assist them in their journey with it. I've also been a cultivator in the state's medical cannabis program for almost 4 years now. So I'm in a unique position where I really get to see firsthand every day what alternative healing can look like. I'm here to speak in support of HF2906 for several reasons. First and foremost, I think it would be very beneficial to veterans like myself who struggle with PTSD and anxiety. Anecdotally, I can say that myself, along with several other veterans that I know both personally and in the network that we service, have reported benefits from psilocybin in a personal capacity. I also really like the language included in this bill because I believe it has good guardrails and medical program with emphasis on research, and I believe that can feasibly garner bipartisan support. It's not a recreational bill, so I don't see any immediate public safety concerns. I also like that language was included to derive the psilocybin from actual mushrooms rather than synthesized compounds as we've seen in other states. I believe that little things like that can go a long way towards restoring trust in institutions, which is at an all-time low. Thank you for allowing me to speak and hear me out today, and I very much hope that this bill passes this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Loos. Dr. Kim, and then Wes Cleaver on deck, please.
Chair and the members of the committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak today. My name is Dr. Kim, and I'm a psychiatrist at the University of Minnesota. And I'm here today to express my support for HF 2906, which would essentially establish a regulated psilocybin therapeutic program in our state, Minnesota. In my clinical practice, which is an inpatient unit at the University of Minnesota, I work with so many individuals suffering from several mental health illnesses, including treatment-resistant depression, PTSD, and substance use disorders. Many of our patients have tried multiple medications, years of psychotherapy, and other treatments available today. Unfortunately, they've experienced very little to no relief, and this is not uncommon. A significant portion of our patients with depression do not respond adequately to currently available treatments. Over the past two decades, a growing body of scientific research has shown promising results for psilocybin-assisted therapy when they are given in a structured clinical setting with trained facilitators. And studies from major research institutions have demonstrated significant improvements for patients with treatment-resistant depression. This therapy, I want to be very clear, is not for casual or recreational use. It involves careful screening, preparation sessions, a supervised therapeutic experience, as well as integration afterward. In other words, it is a very structured therapeutic process designed to maximize benefit and minimize risk. HF 2906, this bill, creates exactly the kind of framework we need to do this very safely. It establishes oversight, licensing, training standards, and safeguards for both patients and the providers. A regulated program like this one is far more safer for leaving patients to seek unregulated or underground treatment options. From a medical standpoint, this therapy is not a cure-all or it doesn't work for everyone, but for individuals who have exhausted conventional treatment options currently available, it may offer a meaningful new option. As a psychiatrist committed to advancing evidence-based care as well as reducing suffering in the mental health community, I respectfully encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. Next up, Wes Cleaver, followed by Dr. Rebecca Lenz. Mr. Cleaver, if you would state your name for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony when you are ready.
Okay, well, thank you. My name is Wes Cleaver, and very heavily in support of Bill HF 2906. My experience has been very recent. About 5 years ago, I had a stroke, which was preceded by a brain tumor, and so I had a lot of brain trauma. And the recovery from that has been long and will continue. I learned recently a hockey player by the name of Daniel Carcillo, really I found through Dr. Google, because I wasn't really able to find anything through the wonderful people at the Mayo Clinic who have been great help to me. I did my own research looking for more mental health and brain trauma, and Daniel Carcillo had retired at 30 from hockey after a lot of hard hits, and had set up a psilocybin therapy program in Oregon and Colorado. So I was literally in Oregon on last Monday, a week ago, and went through the therapy session. So I'm very new to this, but the what I can only describe as mind expansion and spirituality that you experience in these sessions is incredible. Cost me $4,000, so I feel that it's something we need to bring into the state and expand on so that it's accessible to more people. And thank you for the veterans for being here, because I really feel for them. I know what it's like, not to their extent, but I do know. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cleaver. Next up, Dr. Rebecca Lenz, followed by Ross Breck. Good afternoon. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony for 2 minutes. Yes.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Dr. Rebecca Lenz. I am a dual-certified psychiatric and adult geriatric nurse practitioner that has over a decade of service here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. I'm also the founder of Merkaba Integrative Psychiatry, which is a small integrative psychiatry practice here in St. Paul, specializing in ketamine-assisted therapy and other alternative treatment options. I'm certified in psilocybin and psychedelic-assisted therapies through the Integrative Psychiatry Institute, and I'm currently completing supervised hours towards facilitator licensure in both Oregon and Colorado, where regulated psilocybin programs already exist. Like many clinicians in Minnesota, I have been preparing for the possibility of a safe, regulated framework for psychedelic-assisted care. In my work, I care for Minnesotans living with trauma, depression, anxiety, and treatment-resistant mental health conditions. Many of these individuals have done everything our system has asked of them. They have tried multiple medications, therapy, lifestyle changes, and wake up every day feeling like nothing is working. And increasingly, some of my patients come to me with the same quiet question, is there anything else? Right now, some of these people are seeking psilocybin on their own without screening, preparation, or integration support. That is where the greatest risk exists. I want to speak briefly from a personal experience through my legal training experiences with psilocybin-assisted therapy. I have witnessed firsthand the profound therapeutic potential these experiences can hold when approached with preparation, safety, and integration following years of domestic abuse. The magnitude of insight and healing that can emerge has been and can be truly life-changing, and those experiences have deeply shaped how I understand healing, compassion, and the human capacity for transformation. But these experiences are powerful and not appropriate for everyone. This is exactly why a regulated framework matters. This bill creates essential safeguards, health screening, informed consent, trained facilitators, and harm reduction to ensure access happens safely and responsibly. Minnesota has the opportunity to build a thoughtful, compassionate model that prioritizes patient safety and dignity. Minnesotans deserve safe, regulated pathways to healing, not silenced stigma or unsafe alternatives. I urge for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Dr. Lenz, for your testimony. Next up, Ross Breck, followed by Calvin Benson, please. Good afternoon. Mr. Beck, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony when you are prepared.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Ross Brecky, and I was born and raised in Minnesota. There's a very good chance I would not be sitting here in front of all of you today if it wasn't for psilocybin therapy. When I graduated high school in the mid-90s, my grandfather had already committed suicide, and I was starting to deal with severe depression myself. I began drinking a lot of alcohol and smoking a ton of tobacco. By 2011, I had three kids, and I was married, and was trying to keep my life together. But with all the SSRIs and antidepressants, I just wasn't finding any kind of healing whatsoever. By 2018, I was divorced. I had lost my job, and I seriously considered ending my life every single day. By early 2020, my life had spiraled out of control. Then in early 21, I had my first therapeutic psilocybin experience. I can honestly say that it saved my life. On July 6th of this year, I will be celebrating 5 years free of alcohol and tobacco. My children are so happy with me. My parents are so happy with me. I have six friends that have now been inspired by my healing who have now quit drinking themselves and started changing their lives. I really appreciate every single person in this room today. Thank you so much for considering this bill. If you want to go home tonight and know that you helped change the world, you'll vote yes on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brecky. Next up, Calvin Benson, followed by Dr. John Lichtson and Brianna Matrios. Mr. Benson, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. Good afternoon. My name is Calvin, and I'm here in support of House File 2906. When I was 8 years old, my father passed away. That pain led me straight into alcohol and hard drugs by the time I was 17. I was lost until one desperate night at 21, while searching for the next fix, I accidentally found psilocybin mushrooms. That single experience cracked something open in me. I began quitting the hardest drugs one by one, methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine, and then pills. At 27, I went to a retreat, took psilocybin again, and came home to put down alcohol cold turkey. Today, I'm 33, 6 years sober, and free of addiction. I'm a functioning, contributing member of society, and I owe that entirely to my support system and to psilocybin. Johns Hopkins University studies confirm what I lived. In a controlled setting, psilocybin can dramatically reduce addiction and depression. I stand before you as living proof that this medicine works. But right now, it's only available to those who can afford expensive retreats or travel far, far away. If we make psilocybin therapy legal, local, and affordable, we can give thousands of people the same second chance that I received. Your leadership on this issue could end years of suffering for countless families just like mine. Please support these policies that open these healing pathways. One decision from you could save more lives than you'll ever know. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Benson. Dr. Lichtson, followed by Brianna Matrios. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you. Chair and members of the committee, my name is John Lichtson. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist. My chief expertise is in the treatment of PTSD and trauma-related disorders. I worked on the Minneapolis VA's PTSD treatment team for 9 years and served as the team's medical director. I continue to practice outpatient psychiatry in the community with a specialty focus on trauma and addiction. I'm here today to voice my support for the bill HF2906. Psilocybin and psilocybin-assisted therapy have shown enormous potential for PTSD healing. This is a uniquely bright light in a field of care where meds are more often than not inadequate, the therapy often excruciating with a high dropout rate, and the suicide rate tragically and unacceptably high. Rarely does a week go by without one of my patients inquiring about psilocybin. Individually, they represent a very diverse group of Minnesotans, urban and rural, young and old, first responders, veterans, and people of all political affiliations and beliefs. What they reliably share is a real interest and cautious hope that psilocybin can be a real tool for healing. The expert guidance established by the psychedelic task force is thorough, thoughtful, and completely in line with the current medical consensus. Accompanied by this bill, we have an actionable framework to begin assessing the potential benefits of psilocybin for Minnesotans in need. What we do not have is the benefit of time. Please support this bill. It is rooted in solid evidence and true human compassion and has enormous potential to save lives. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Lichtson. Next up, Brianna Matrios, followed by Maggie Kirkwood. These are the last two testifiers. Then we are going to have discussion. There have been two people on the committee who have asked to comment. I'd like to move forward with the next bill shortly, so I'm going to hold it to two comments. Please proceed with your testimony after you introduce yourself, please, Brianna.
Thank you, Buju, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brianna Matrius, and I'm an enrolled member of a tribe here in Minnesota. I was an EMT for many years, and in addition to that, I was a volunteer firefighter for almost 7 years. Fast forward to today, I now work with a different type of trauma, working in tribal communities, helping people to understand the impacts of historical and intergenerational trauma and how it shows up in our life today. I'm here today to speak in support of the House File 2906, and I speak on behalf of myself from my own Indigenous perspective and my own healing experience that I've had with these sacred plant medicines. I've learned on this path that healing is just not individual, it's intergenerational and collective regardless of who you are. For much of my life, I watched people that I love struggle with pain, whether that's from addiction, PTSD, suicide, depression, grief and loss, and many other deep soul wounds that make everyday life a struggle. The truth is that trauma is something that touches all of us. Every one of us in this room carries experiences from our own lives and the lives of our ancestors, which shapes how we show up in this world, how we make decisions, and how we interact with one another. This bill represents an opportunity for Minnesota to move forward thoughtfully with research, regulation, and clinical oversight so that many people suffering from severe mental health challenges have access to new forms of care. Psychedelic-assisted therapy, when done responsibly with proper safeguards, have shown that the potential to help people process deep trauma, depression, and grief in ways that Western medicine cannot reach. Minnesota, just want to touch that. Minnesota, as Minnesota explores these sacred plant medicines, that it's essential that Indigenous voices are heard, that our sovereignty is recognized, and that our cultural knowledge is included in the conversation. Tribes should be engaged partners in shaping how these conversations move forward, ensuring that Indigenous traditions are never exploited or appropriated regardless of their origin. At its heart, this conversation is about healing for all. It's not about drugs, it's about medicine. It's not about politics. It's about sinking into the heart space just for a second, realizing that we have a chance to give Minnesotans another pathway that allows them to move toward wholeness. Chimigwich Chiwal, and please support this bill. Chimigwich.
Thank you very much, Ms. Matrios, for your testimony. Last testifier, Ms. Maggie Kirkwood, please. Please state your name for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Maggie Kirkwood. I proudly live in Minnesota. I'm a mother and a business owner. I am here today as someone whose life was transformed through intentional and responsible work with psilocybin. For years, I struggled with severe depression and a very unhealthy relationship with alcohol. I felt stuck in painful patterns, but more than anything, I felt deeply isolated and like I had nowhere to turn. My life was spiraling, and I began experiencing thoughts that frightened me and showed how much I was truly struggling. When I began working with psilocybin intentionally and with care, something shifted. I felt a profound sense of support and safety that helped me face my pain instead of escaping it. For the first time in years, I felt grounded, connected, and capable of real healing. The shift I experienced felt immediate and profound. That relief became the foundation for deeper healing and personal responsibility. It helped me to heal my relationship with alcohol and gently access deeper emotional pain I had carried for years. I no longer live under the weight of severe depression. Neuroscience suggests these experiences can help form new patterns and thinking and behavior, and I felt that change in my own life. That shift was just the beginning of a deeper journey in healing of self-awareness. I believe in thoughtful frameworks that emphasize preparation, support, and integration. This bill establishes clear structure and safeguards so people can support in intentional and accountable ways. This bill is about public health, harm reduction, and ensuring Minnesotans who are struggling have access to safe, regulated options for care and support. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we are going to go to the discussion of the bill. First up, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair and members, for this bill. 2 years ago when we passed the task force, I just remember being so excited that I think we were leaning into what could really be life-saving at the time, and so I'm glad that we're having this conversation. I do have a question, but first I just want to say a couple things, because one, the trauma disclosure in me just wants to name that we shared some really hard truths about people's lives, and I want to thank the testifiers for your courage to share your personal stories as we move forward in a political path to find ways to help heal. I come from a long line of veterans, and so I want to say thank you to all the veterans in the room who spoke up on your about your service and your experience. We do know that in the letters that I was reading, all the support letters, a statistic stuck out to me that I think we all know, but we just don't remind ourselves, that 17 veterans a day we lose to suicide. And we have a choice here. We have a choice that we can do something to protect and serve the people who served us in some of the most traumatic ways. I also saw and read stories about cancer patients. I lost my dad to cancer and many of my family. And if you or anybody you know have experienced the pain that comes with cancer, I think we're looking for a solid solution here to help people get through that. For those of you who shared your suicide attempt stories, I'm just so glad you're here. I'm so glad that you made it through that. I know that experience personally as well, and I just want to name that. I also want to name that substance use is a disorder. It's a medical condition that happens to us and our families. We just heard a bill, I think, I don't remember, last week, I get time confused here, about how long insurance companies can wait on pre-op for some of the tools and the medicines that we need to save lives. I also am living sobriety 804 days, and so I want to tell the people here who shared their story, it does matter. It does matter to other people who are walking in sobriety to know that we are in this together and that we're fighting. So thank you to all the testifiers who were courageous in that. I think we are on the cusp of something that's really amazing. I know I've done a lot of research on Australia and Canada and some of the things that we're seeing there and their impacts on mental health. My question is around the three-year review. It's not, and maybe I missed it in the DE, I'm just interested because some of these things, I'm not totally sure when we do reviews, we actually do a great job at the return on investment and understanding, like we heard some of the stories here, we've gotten some people out of ongoing addictions, using ongoing medications, depression medications. We get people to functioning individuals in society, taxpayers. Like, is the three-year review looking at any of the societal impacts or return on investment in what this does to us as a society? Thank you.
Representative Gilman.
Can I answer that question, Chair?
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Please.
Okay.
Representative.
Chair, Representative Keeler, thank you for your words, and I want to echo everything you said about our amazing testifiers today. I think you all see why we like to work in this area, because we hear so many success stories of hard work from really brave individuals across the board. To your question specifically about program evaluation, for your members on the committee, it's 7.18 and through 7.20 where that program evaluation is talked about. And in this draft, it's purposely vague because we do want the commissioner to be able to be as full-rounded as it can be. To your question specifically, I mean, we know behavioral health, the cost societally is on the rise across many sectors, whether that is treatments that are offered from the state or private insurance, private practice, whether it is homelessness. I mentioned some stats in the beginning as far as how these mental illnesses and then other substance use disorder cascade to other health disorders. So it's massive. I don't have an exact number for you, but I would certainly want that to be part of the evaluation of this program as a whole.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you. I like that. I think it's good that as we're setting up reviews, we look at what that is. Last, I will say there was a testifier, I didn't catch his name, that mentioned a hockey player that did work. Point of personal privilege, go Spuds. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you, representatives, for bringing forth this bill. A couple things I have questions about. I love plant medicine. I've studied plant medicine for 30 years, essential oils, all kinds of different things. I've done a lot of work with plants in general, and I'm curious about this bill. A couple of things, this bill does need some work, and just the regulation pieces of it concern me. administering it and who can administer it. So Oregon and California have this going right now. Colorado, thank you. The one part of the bill, when it talks about facilitators, requiring licensed facilitators to only in Oregon have high school diplomas. I was just reading a little bit more information on this, with as little as 160 hours of training. So just in the state of Minnesota, like only a quarter of those hours required for massage therapy license, for example. So the lack of medical qualifications creates sometimes dangerous situations when you crack into big things like PTSD and just the trauma that we've heard about today. Mm-hmm. But I also see the value in plant medicine. I really do. Another thing is the fiscal note piece of it. I know you want this to go to commerce. And when we talk about a state agency overseeing another aspect, we've also seen this in the state of Minnesota right now. Some of our agencies aren't doing a very good job overseeing a lot of things that we deal with people. But I want to see this move through in a sense of what could this look like for folks that have gone up against things that have just been very traumatic for them. So I did also come across this weekend in looking through this bill, a Johns Hopkins study in regards to Lyme disease and post-Lyme, chronic Lyme, mm-hmm. any neurological things, and where this medicine has been very beneficial for folks that struggle with those things. And here in Minnesota, there's a lot of folks that have neurological Lyme things as well. So just want to know, where is this going and fiscal note-wise?
Sure.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Gilman, and thank you for your conversations about this before here, and mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll continue to work on. Because I should have said in my opening, what I mean to say is this is a work in progress. I want to sit down with those of you who want to sit down and talk about this, about how it could be tighter, and get this to a place where everyone is comfortable. To your specific questions, first for the licensed facilitator. Oregon, you mentioned right now, does only have the educational requirement of high school. You would have to have a criminal background check that is cleared, a certification through a curriculum that they approve, as you mentioned, and then they do have to pass an exam. So there is several steps along the way until they get to that. We don't specify in the bill. We allow the rulemaking to be for the Commissioner of Health. So maybe that's something we could discuss of if there's something you would feel comfortable with, including I would happily sit down and talk to you about that. Currently, it is open-ended to give the Commissioner of Health the ability. As far as fiscal note, we do not have the fiscal note back, which is, of course, is a massive question in this committee. Also in the Commerce Committee, the reason we are sending it there is because the Office of Cannabis Management budget is under that committee's jurisdiction. It's also helpful I'm on that committee so I can keep tabs on when that fiscal note comes in. And, of course, what that fiscal note says is really going to dictate how this goes forward from here. It will need to make some other committee stops if it's going to be passed into law. It touches on civil and criminal liabilities, and so there would be places we would have to go. For now, we're taking it one stop at a time as we wait for that fiscal note.
Thank you.
Good. Yes, thank you. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I was going to forego the opportunity in just a time, but let me just say thank you for bringing this. This is an interesting discussion. Your testifiers are amazing, both professional and the individual ones. But I also want to give a shout out to one of them, my former Hennepin County colleague, Adam Tomczyk. So thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing your story. And with that, I will yield.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Smith, Representative West.
Only thing I want to say is if this was a terrible idea, you would have seen a lot of medical professionals here to oppose it. You did not see that today, so I'd encourage members to continue the work in progress.
In closing, I would say you saw today the stories that make this worthwhile. I mean, this is not a Rep. West or a Rep. Smith or a Senator Curran bill. This is for Stefan and Eric and David and Ross, Brianna, Maggie, and the thousands of Minnesotans that could be testifying in the future if they had access to this bill. So thank you for giving us this testimony. I look forward to working on this with you in the future.
Thank you, Representative Smith and Representative West. Renew the motion to move House File 2906 to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. We will also entertain the ability to bring this bill back here for a final look at the fiscal note. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Nay.
And the motion prevails. Members, we are going to stick around a few more minutes and try to complete the final bill of the day. It's going to be a short one. The testifiers are here and ready. And would ask for Representative Zalesnikar to take the front table, and we will move on this.
This is your re-election bill, Madeline.
This is House File 3832. Representative Zalesnikar, would you like to move your bill? Representative Zalesnikar moves House File 3832 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Representative Zalesnikar, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill is really, truly a bipartisan, simple bill. It just amends the definition of compounding in the Pharmacy Practice Act to allow flavoring of a medication generally used in children and sometimes with seniors in care settings.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. We'll move to testifiers. Krista Ullman will be first. And thank proceed you. With your testimony. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, and good afternoon. My name is Krista Ullman, and I am a museum exhibit developer by training, but currently taking a career pause to raise my three young children. I am here to urge you to support House File 3832. I first became aware of this issue last November when my three-year-old daughter was prescribed amoxicillin for an ear infection. While picking up her medicine, I asked the pharmacist what flavors they had available. When my oldest daughter had an ear infection a few years prior, the pharmacist let her choose between a handful of different flavors. This time, however, I was told that amoxicillin now came pre-flavored and bubblegum was the only option. We went home and I attempted to give my daughter her first dose. The second that bubblegum amoxicillin reached her tongue, she immediately rejected it. No amount of cajoling or bribery worked. I tried mixing it with juice and chocolate pudding, and she still would not touch it. My husband and I resorted to holding her down and trying to squeeze it in her cheek with a syringe, but she would cry and gag and spit it out all over herself and us. I called three different pharmacies to try to get a different flavor, but they all told me the same thing. They only had bubblegum amoxicillin. Choose your own flavor was no longer an option. The fourth pharmacy I tried finally explained that there were new guidelines in place, so only compounding pharmacies could add flavor to medication now. So I called a compounding pharmacy, and they told me they didn't do amoxicillin. At this point, we had struggled with this medication for several days, and my daughter had taken maybe half of a dose in total. I messaged her pediatrician, and she suggested trying a different antibiotic, which was strawberry flavored. Although my daughter was very distressful, she bravely tried it, declared it tasted just fine, and finished the course of antibiotics without fuss. But this whole experience was extremely frustrating to me. Not having different flavors available to my daughter delayed her treatment and cost us time, energy, money, and many tears. I doubt I'm the first parent who has encountered this issue since the flavoring guidelines were changed, and I know I won't be the last. But this bill has the power to make this easier for kids and parents in Minnesota. Taking medication is no fun, but it doesn't have to be a battle. Something as simple as flavor can make all the difference. I urge you to support this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Ullman. Next, second testifier, last one, Dr. Jason Varon. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Greetings and thank you, Mr. Chairperson and committee members. My name's Jason Varon. I'm a doctor of pharmacy. I recently retired from the University of Minnesota, where I helped educate student pharmacists for over 12 years. I'm past president of the Minnesota Pharmacists Association, but my primary professional identity is community pharmacist, a role I've filled for over 30 years. I'm here to support House File 3832, which indicates that the definition of compounding does not include the use of flavoring agent to flavor a medicine. Since 2007, the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy adopted and enforces USP Chapter 795, which pertains to the compounding of pharmaceutical products. Compounding refers to creating a pharmaceutical or changing a conventionally manufactured product. For instance, if a person has a skin condition that requires an antibiotic and an anti-inflammatory, the prescriber will often write a prescription for a mixture of two or more active ingredients. In this case, careful documentation is recorded, such as calculations, mixing process, lot numbers of each ingredient, and more. This is important so we have a record of exactly what the patient is receiving. Flavoring is another issue. A pharmacist adds a few drops of flavoring that is inactive and therapeutically inert to an existing medicine, most often a suspension or liquid. Does adding a flavoring change the original product? As a scientist, I would say yes, it does. It may be significant if conducting research on certain qualities of a chemical or formulation. But as a community pharmacist, my personal and professional responsibility is to provide the best possible health outcomes for my patients. The Minnesota Board of Pharmacy has a challenging mission of protecting patients from pharmacists and pharmacy. They are charged with creating and enforcing rules and providing guidance, again, with the idea of protecting patients. They have provided guidance that pharmacists who are not registered compounding pharmacists can flavor medicines if certain conditions are met. These conditions include documentation of the flavor manufacturer product, lot numbers, expiration dates, calculation and quantities of volume of additives, water, flavoring agents, etc. This may sound reasonable, but let's look at the impact on our patients.
Dr. Varon, I'll need you to wrap up your testimony.
Okay. I thank you for that. My point was with this flavoring, the additional additional information causes a situation where pharmacists don't have the time to deal with it, and they get what happened with our previous testifier. And then the safety of these, the main company that provides the prescription flavoring, has been used in over 200 million prescriptions with zero reported incidents of allergic or other harmful incidents. So thanks to Representative Zeliznikar for asking me to participate and available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Varon. Seeing no member questions, we will closing comments.
Okay. Thank you, Chair and members. You know, the flavoring doesn't change the medication. Having worked in nursing homes and assisted living for 40 years, it was common practice to have crushed meds with seniors that can't swallow, that have difficulty, to have it in applesauce, pudding, those type of things. And for the young children, I think reducing fear and anxiety is an important thing, and I would urge you to vote yes. Thank you.
Representative Zeliznikar renews your motion that House File 3832 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 3832 is recommended to be placed on the general register, and we are concluded. Thank you.